Our reading is from Luke in chapter 20, beginning to read at verse 27. Some of the Sadducees, who say there is no resurrection, came to Jesus with a question. "Teacher," they said, "Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies and leaves a wife but no children, the man must marry the widow and have children for his brother. Now there are seven brothers. The first one married a woman and died childless. The second, and then the third, married her. And in the same way, the seven died, leaving no children. Finally, the woman died too. Now then, at the resurrection, whose wife will she be, since the seven were married to her?" Jesus replied, "The people of this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy of taking part in that age and in the resurrection from the dead will neither marry nor be given in marriage. And they can no longer die, for they are like the angels. They are God's children, since they are children of the resurrection. But in the account of the bush, even Moses showed that the dead rise, for he calls the Lord the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living, for to him all are alive." Some of the teachers of the law responded, "Well said, teacher," and no one dared to ask him any more questions. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning, everybody. Lovely to see you all this morning. It's a bit colder this morning, isn't it? Definitely felt it on my bike. I had to wear my big thick gloves this morning rather than my thin kind of autumn spring gloves. I moved into my winter gloves. I wonder if any of you, I'm sure some of you are an expert on anything. Maybe there's one subject that you know lots and lots about. For some people it's trains, or it might be a certain film, the Star Wars films, or maybe you're a stamp collector, you know everything about stamps. Maybe you have some sort of obsession. Well, when I was a teenager, well, first of all, music's always been really important in my life, but when I was a teenager, I became obsessed by the music of the Beatles. So I was listening in the 90s, as a teenager, I was listening to bands like Blur and Oasis, and I'd learnt that they were influenced by bands like the Beatles and the Kinks. And so I started raiding my parents' record collection, and I realised that their predecessors, the bands that they were inspired by, were so much better than these new ones that I was listening to. So I became quite obsessed with the Beatles, and this was and is my favourite Beatles album. It's just called the Beatles, but it's always been called the White Album, because it's just got a plain white cover. Unfortunately, I don't have it on vinyl. This is CD. If I was a true fan, I'd have it on vinyl, of course. And I was just obsessed with all the songs on this record. And in fact, I learned to play every single song on the record. I even remember I wrote out the names, the titles of the song, and then exactly how many seconds each song was. So there was a time when, if you'd have asked me, you know, how long is Blackbird, which is one of the songs on there, how long is that song, I would have been able to tell you it's 2 minutes and 37 seconds long. I was obsessed. And I think maybe I was about 16, I didn't have many friends, didn't have a girlfriend. So this kind of swallowed up all my time and my energy being obsessed by this thing. And sometimes when somebody's obsessed by something, we call them a geek. So maybe you have a computer geek. Now, I remember when I was here getting ready for my licensing service, and we were wandering around the church with the church wardens and the rural dean, and we were looking at where I was going to stand and where the bishop was going to sit. And then we went to the back and said, "This is the bell, you pull it and it will make a donging noise." You know, I had to be taught everything. And at the back, Martin Ainsworth was kind of scurrying around while we were doing this with kind of different bits of technology. And I got into a conversation with Martin. It was the first time I met him, and he was telling me about this little camera that he had that was able to kind of take different angled shots from all over the church from this one little black box. And he was showing me his iPad and how it connects to his iPad, and you press this button and this happens, and it was all really amazing. And I said to Martin, "Are you a bit of a geek, a bit of a tech geek?" And he said, "Yes, I am." He was kind of quite proud to say, "Yes, I am." Because he loves technology and he loves how it all works. He knows lots of things about it. And so he's a bit of a tech geek. And I was a bit of a Beatles geek. Now, Jesus, in this passage this morning, encounters some geeks. He encounters a group of geeks, a group of people who are obsessed by something. these are the Sadducees. And what is strange about the Sadducees is that they're obsessed by the resurrection, which is funny because they don't actually believe in the resurrection. So here come the Sadducees, and they come to Jesus with a question. There's a few things we need to know about the Sadducees. First of all, there's two main groups. There's the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And the way that you remember what they believe about the resurrection is the Pharisees, far I see, they could see into eternity, so they believed in the resurrection. And then the Sadducees were sad because they didn't believe in the resurrection. So that's just a little tip to help you remember. So today we're encountering the Sadducees. They don't believe in the resurrection, but yet they come to Jesus with a question about the resurrection. So that's the first thing we need to know about them. They don't believe in the resurrection. The second thing we need to know about them is that they were quite a small group of people. They were sort of a minority, but they were the ruling class. They were the kind of the top of the social structure. And so they had a lot of wealth, and they had a certain position within society, and they were very comfortable in that position, and they didn't want anyone to disrupt it. And here comes Jesus, and first of all, he's a bit disturbing to them because he doesn't seem interested in you know, the wealth and the things that they wear and all the money that they have. He doesn't seem interested in that. He's quite different. And also, he hangs around with all the wrong people. He's not trying to kind of cozy up to them, even though they're at the top of the social structure. He's busy, you know, talking to people who are much lower down or all over the place in the social structure. He seems to not really care for these class divides. Jesus just kind of burst onto the scene, and he's getting a lot of attention, and they're worried that he's going to disrupt their comfortable, privileged, rich position at the top of society. And so they come to Jesus with a question. And let's say this question is about the resurrection. And the Sadducees will have gone to the Pharisees with this question many times, and they'll have said, well, how can the resurrection be true? Because what if there was a man who died, and then his wife had to marry his brother, and then that brother died, so then she had to marry the younger brother, and so on and so on, and then when they got to heaven, what would happen? It would be a logistical nightmare. Therefore, the resurrection can't be true. There can't be life after death. So they had this little technical detail, and they like to throw it at their opponents and say, ah, no, there can't be a resurrection, because what would you do about marriage? And so Jesus comes along, and they think, ah, we'll get him with this question, because we know that Jesus believes in the resurrection, but we Sadducees know that it's just not true. So we'll try throwing this question at Jesus. So they come to Jesus with this question. At the resurrection, whose wife will she be, this lady who's had to marry all these brothers? The resurrection can't be true because it would result in the woman having seven husbands, and that just wouldn't make any sense. One is bad enough. You wouldn't want seven. So they're saying there can't be such thing as the resurrection. They're obsessed with the detail. That's why they're geeks. They're obsessed with this little detail. And they're so focused on proving other people wrong, whether it's the Pharisees or whether it's Jesus. They're so focused on this that they're missing out on who Jesus is and what Jesus is about. They're so focused on this little technical detail that they're missing out on the kingdom of God. They're missing out on the real reason of what it's all about because they're obsessed with this little detail. Jesus does not ignore their question. He could dismiss them and say, that's a ridiculous scenario and it's a tiny detail and why don't you just get over it? And he could just walk on and not respond. But he doesn't. He responds, he listens to them, and he responds in a language that they can understand. Jesus talks about Moses to them. Now, the Sadducees were obsessed with Moses because that was the bit of the Bible that they really believed in strongly. So when Jesus starts talking about Moses, their ears prick up and they, oh, this is interesting. And Jesus says that, you know, when Moses encounters God at the burning bush, God says, I am the God of your father, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And those people, if they're dead, you know, if there's no resurrection and they're dead, how can God be the father of those people? God is clearly talking about people who are still living. So there must be a resurrection. And we're told that the crowds around him say, ah, that's a good answer. We've never been able to hit the Sadducees with that answer before. He answers their question, but he also wants to take them further. He wants them to take them beyond their little question, their little quibble. He wants to take them further so that they can get beyond it. I've spent many years running Alpha and hearing people's questions and hang-ups about God and about faith and about Jesus. And sometimes people's questions can seem sort of irrelevant, or people seem to be stuck on one particular thing. Like, you know, how can God be real if there aren't dinosaurs mentioned in the Bible or something like that? You know, just this kind of small thing, you think, There's so much going on here. God is real and alive, and Jesus died for you and loves you, and yet you're obsessed about dinosaurs. But you don't say that. You don't respond like that. You hear their question, you listen to their question, and you respond as best you can. You respond to their question. You say, yeah, it doesn't mention dinosaurs in the Bible. There's lots of other things it doesn't mention, like mobile phones and those kinds of things, but it doesn't mean they don't exist. And so you listen to people's questions, and when people know that you can hear, that you've heard their question, and that you've tried to answer it, and some questions you can't answer, and you just have to be honest and say, I don't know. I struggled with that question too. And once people know that you're engaging with their question, they're then able, usually, to take them further and realize that there's more than just that little thing that they're obsessed with. So here are three tips when dealing with people's questions and when people seem to be stuck on a certain thing. First of all, we need to listen well. Jesus listened well to the Sadducees, even though the thing that they were going on out, they were really trying to trick him. It wasn't a genuine question, really. It was a bit of a silly scenario. He listened. He listened well. And that's what we need to do. We need to listen well. Secondly, we need to respond as best we can. We need to hear their question and we need to respond as best we can. And as I say, we might not always be able to answer. We might not always be able to give a good, nice, neat answer. Like the question of suffering, for example. There's no quick, easy answer to that question. So we need to listen to it. We need to be honest and say, I struggle with that too. And have the discussion. Because it's not about giving the answer. It's not about winning an argument. It's about a conversation. So we need to respond as best we can. And then thirdly, we need to journey with people beyond that question. Because usually, actually, it's not about the question. Usually there's something behind the question. So that thing about dinosaurs or the thing about suffering is really because they want to believe that there's a God, but they struggle because of what's happened to them in their life, or they struggle because of the suffering they see in the world. And if you're able to engage people with that question and talk with them, then you're able to go beyond it. You're able to say, well, we don't have an answer to that, but should that prevent you from knowing God in your life? Maybe there's more that we can know and more that we can journey on with. So we can get stuck in this passage. If we, like the Sadducees, get stuck on the detail, maybe when you hear this passage, you think, what? There won't be marriage in heaven. And now, it'll depend on your experience of marriage what your response to that is. Now, if your experience is that you had a terrible experience of marriage and your marriage broke up and it was lots of heartache and lots of pain, you'll think, great, I won't have to be married in heaven. Thank you. However, if your experience in this life is a good experience of marriage, if you've invested many, many years in making your relationship work and you feel, you know, truly in love 50 years later, then you'll be thinking, so you mean that when we get to heaven, we won't be able to be married anymore and we're going to be separated? The thing is not to get stuck on these details, because there's so much about life beyond this life that we just don't know. And Jesus doesn't give us the detail. Here we have the Sadducees trying to get the detail. And we have other times where the disciples are saying, when will it happen? When will you come back? And Jesus says, don't worry about the detail. Worry about life now. Heaven is coming. The suffering, pain, and death will end. But you need to focus on life here, living life well now, here with me. That's what God says to us. Don't worry about the detail of the afterlife, because there's enough going on here. We need to get to the real point. So what's the real point of this passage? Well, the real point of this passage is that the resurrection is real. The resurrection happened. Jesus did actually raise from the dead, and we will actually be raised from the dead. That's the important thing in this passage. The resurrection is something that did happen. It happened for Jesus, and it will happen for us. We will be raised from the dead. And you might think, well, what difference does believing in that mean and matter to me now? You know, it's something that's going to happen in the future. What difference does it mean now? Well, three things. First of all, it means that we're right with God. The resurrection, the fact that Jesus didn't stay dead, that he rose from the dead, means that we can be right with God. Paul, in 1 Corinthians 15, wrote this: Christ died for our sins in accordance with the scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day in accordance with the scriptures. If Christ had not been raised, your faith is futile and you are still in your sins. Paul makes this point really clearly. If Christ had not been raised, your faith is worth nothing. If the resurrection did not happen, all this building, our faith, us singing these songs, is coming together, eating this bread and wine, it's nothing. if Jesus didn't actually rise from the dead? See, it does not end at the cross, does it? The Easter story. I remember meeting with a group of children once who came from the local school to our church, and I said, "What is Easter all about?" And this little girl put her hand up and said, "Easter is when Jesus died." And I thought, no, I didn't say that to her, but I thought, no, that's not the story of Easter. That would be a terrible story if the story of Easter was that Jesus died. No, the story of Easter is that Jesus rose from the dead. That's the important thing. Lots of people have died. If Jesus had simply died on that cross, it would just be another tragic, violent death at the hands of the Roman Empire. The amazing thing about Easter is not that Jesus died, but that Jesus rose from the dead, that Jesus broke the power of death, the first person ever to conquer death. And that changes everything. When Jesus rose from the dead, when he walked from that tomb on that Easter day, everything changed. Sin was defeated. We are put right with God. Sometimes we think about the problem of sin, you know, being dealt with at Jesus' cross and resurrection is all about the bad things we've done, but actually it's much more than that. Because as we say in the Lord's Prayer, sometimes and often we are sinned against. And maybe for some of us, we have been sinned against in big ways in our lives. And we need to know that that power is broken as well. Those things that have been done to us, not just sins that we've committed, but sins that have been done against us, we have been sinned against. And that power is broken at the resurrection too, when Jesus walked from the grave. So that's the first thing, that we are put right with God through Jesus' resurrection. Without it, we would not be. The second thing is that there is always hope. And I spoke about this a week or two ago. Even in the worst of times, even when we hit rock bottom, when life seems unbearable, there is always hope. For Jesus is stronger than any power, anything that we face, even death itself. And this isn't just a personal thing. This is something that affects the whole world. Throughout history, tyrants and dictators have used killing and the threat of death as a powerful tool to oppress and to rule. You think about Hitler, you think about Stalin, you think about all these people throughout history. The power that they've had over people is that they've been able to kill people. That's been their ultimate power and their ultimate threat. But the resurrection destroys this power and this weapon. It renders death powerless. You can imprison us, you can torture us, you can even kill us. But Jesus has the victory. Jesus makes sure that we will rise again from anything, even death. Death, where is your sting, writes Paul. Where is your victory? Because Jesus walked away from death. I sometimes think about it as though Jesus was put in the grave, and because he has so much light and love within him, he could not be contained within the grave. I think about it like Ted, my 2-year-old, when we were getting ready to move house, we had lots of Pickford's boxes all around our house. We were trying to fill them up, and he was often emptying them. But sometimes we put Ted in a box because he'd want to get in it, and he thought it was really fun. And so we'd take our little 2-year-old, who's a bundle of energy in life, and we put him in a box, and, you know, put clothes over the flaps, and you could hear this little giggling inside. But he wouldn't stay in that box. He had to burst out of it because he had so much life and love inside of him. And it's like that with Jesus and the grave. The grave was no place for Jesus. Jesus is life. He is light. You can't keep him in the grave. And so on the third day, he broke out. He broke out of that grave, bursting forth, as we say in our liturgy. So there is always hope. Thirdly, and finally, matter matters. When Jesus walked from that grave in his human physical body, he affirmed that the physical body and the material world matters, that it's important. Jesus didn't float away into heaven as a disembodied spirit. He came back in flesh. He ate with his disciples. He ate food. He was saying, "I'm not a ghost. Touch my hands, touch my flesh. This is flesh. Flesh matters and matter matters. This world matters. God so loved the world that he gave his only son. Not God so loved our souls or, you know, our little floaty spirits. God so loved the world, this world. He loved it so much. He was willing to die for it, and he came back in human flesh to say, this world, this earth, I'm going to come back, and heaven and earth are going to be one, and this earth will be redeemed. Matter matters. So the resurrection is hugely significant. It changes everything, and it changes how we live our life. It puts us right with God. It destroys the power of death, And it affirms that this world that we live in now and this flesh that we inhabit is important and it matters to God. We are resurrection people. That's who we are. It's part of our identity. We carry that hope. We need to be ready for those difficult questions, ready to listen, ready to respond, and ready to journey with people beyond those questions. And we need to know that we are resurrection people, that there is always hope, and that we are put right with God. Amen.